From a theological perspective, the most striking feature of the Book of Esther is God's absence. God's name does not appear anywhere in the Megillah, which, at least on the level of the Pshat, the simple contextual meaning, presents an entirely human story. I would like to focus on a surprising idea that appears in the rabbinic tradition in this context, the idea of God's sleep. I do not mean sleep here in a physiological sense. The question before us is whether sleep is an appropriate metaphor for the degree of God's involvement in the world and God's providence over God's people. Are there moments of catastrophe that unfold not as part of a hidden divine plan, but simply because God is not watching? Is God absent from the Megillah because God is asleep? The root of this discussion lies in the Megillah's reference to insomnia. At the beginning of chapter 6, the narrative pauses to describe the king's sleepless night. Balaila hahu nadeda shnat hamelech. On that night, the sleep of the king was disturbed. The Talmud comments on this verse. On that night, the king's sleep was disturbed. Rabbi Tanchum says, the sleep of the king of the universe was disturbed. Rava said, it was literally the sleep of King Ahasuerus. Rabbi Tanchum is fully aware of the absence of explicit divine presence in the plain sense of the Megillah, and he employs a midrash to reinsert God into the story. He does so by noting that the text refers not to Ahasuerus by name, but simply to the king. In his midrashic reading, there is a moment in the story when God can no longer sleep. The king's insomnia marks the turning point of the Megillah. After Haman issues his decrees and the Jews mourn, Esther courageously steps forward and attempts to intervene, but her chances of success appear slim. Then, after Esther's first banquet with Haman and the Ahasuerus, the king's sleep is disturbed. From that moment on, the dynamic shifts dramatically. Ahasuerus learns of Mordechai's role in saving his life and is filled with gratitude. He simultaneously becomes aware of Haman's true ambitions, fantasizing about royal garments and honors, and commands him to parade Mordechai through the city. Haman is humiliated. His supporters foresee his downfall, and the ground is prepared for the final act of salvation by Esther. Rabbi Tanchum's position, then, seems to be that God slept during the first half of the Megillah. Divine providence was absent, allowing Haman to advance his plot. Then, midway through the story, God wakes up. The return of divine supervision drives the process of redemption. Rava responds, it was literally the sleep of King Ahasuerus. What is Rava insisting on? Surely he understands that the Rabbi Tanchum is offering a midrashic reading. I think Rava rejects the theological price Rabbi Tanchum is willing to pay in order to insert God into the story. God does not sleep, not even metaphorically. Therefore, he neither awakens nor suffers from insomnia. Rava refuses to concede that God was absent, even temporarily, during the first half of the narrative. Against Rabbi Tanchum, Rava aligns himself with Psalm 121. Hine lo yanum velo ishan shomer Israel. Behold, the guardian of Israel, neither slumbers nor sleeps. God was always pulling the strings, both during salvation, but also in the difficult moments that precede it. The whole story is part of the divine plan. An extreme version of this position might suggest that even when tragedy hits and salvation does not come, it is not because God is absent, but rather he is responsible for the tragedy as well. We are left then with two positions regarding God's sleep on Purim. One that claims God slept and then awoke in the middle of the story, and another that vehemently rejects the very notion of divine inactivity. The Kabbalist Rabbi Isaac Luria, the Ari, was certainly familiar with the Talmudic Midrash, But he deploys the idea of divine sleep on Purim in a far more radical way. He follows neither Rabbi Tanhum nor Rava, but suggests that in fact, God was never awake at all for the entire episode. The Ari returns to the creation of the human being. According to a midrash, man and woman were initially created as a single being with two faces, attached back to back. For the woman to emerge as an independent entity capable of standing face to face with the man, a process of separation, nesira, was required. That separation could occur only when the human fell into a deep sleep. As Genesis states, the Lord God cast a deep sleep upon the human, and he slept. Only through this sleep could the woman cease to be an appendage and emerge as a fully independent self, capable of authentic relationship. The Ari explains that the same dynamic applies to the relationship between God and Israel. During exile, the relationship is achor be'achor, back to back. God provides protection and sustenance, but the bond is one of dependency rather than encounter. Redemption, by contrast, means returning to a panim bepanim, face-to-face relationship, marked by reciprocity and love. But for such a meeting to occur, God must first sleep, withdrawing active providence, and thus allowing God's people to be cut free, so that they could turn and face their Creator. These transitional moments are extremely vulnerable. There is no one watching. God is truly asleep. According to the Ari, the story of Purim unfolds precisely in such a point. And I quote, because the events of Mordechai and Esther occur at the end of the 70 years of Babylonian exile, the process of repair had already begun. The beginning took the form of a divine sleep. That explains the immense danger Israel faced at that time. Wicked Haman recognized the diminished divine supervision in these days. So the trouble starts when God is sleeping. But in the Ari's system, God cannot wake up too early. It would halt the redemptive process and return the relationship to its earlier back-to-back state. As the Ari continues, for this divine sleep is for the sake of Israel, so they may return face-to-face and be redeemed and build the temple. Divine sleep as a complete absence of providence is painful and frightening, but it is also an invitation to human responsibility. For the Ari, salvation in the Megillah comes through Estel, who must dig deep within herself to discover her identity and latent strength. There is no point in searching for God in the story. The entire point is that God is not there. Rather, God is asleep, leaving us to act on our own. According to the Megillah, what we celebrate on Purim is v'nahafochu, a complete reversal, a reality saturated with fear and danger that suddenly turns into one of joy and relief. But what lies at the heart of this reversal? What is the transformation we long for this Purim? And what kind of spiritual effort is required of us in order to bring that transformation about? According to Rava's position, the desired reversal is a shift in human perspective. It is the human being who awakens and discovers the divine providence never truly departed. According to Rabbi Tanhum, by contrast, the reversal takes place within divinity itself. We celebrate the fact that even when God leaves us, God ultimately returns and draws us back into a divine embrace. A widespread Ashkenazi custom of chanting the verse, on that night the king's sleep was disturbed, and the melody used for proclaiming God's kingship in the high holidays, reflects an acceptance of Rabbi Tanhum's approach. Balayla unadeda shnat ha-melech. There is something deeply tempting about waking God in the middle of the Megillah. Personally, however, I find myself identifying with the path of the Ari. To the displeasure of the congregants in the synagogue where I read the Megillah, I therefore read this verse in the regular tune. In the end, God's name truly does not appear in the Megillah. No one will bring about the Purim reversal on our behalf. God's will, at the moment just before falling asleep, is that we take responsibility for our lives and confront the challenges the world places before us. This will is a remarkable and deeply moving testimony to the trust God places in us. I bless us all that on the coming Purim, we may be worthy of that trust, that like Esther and Mordechai, we may find within ourselves the strengths God has planted within us. And then, after we have redeemed reality ourselves, we may merit once again to meet God face to face. Happy Purim.